Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 91 of Wheat All About It, or what I'm calling A Vacation Every Day, about my August 27th conversation with Mike Carstensen as he harvested a field of soft white spring wheat 10 miles north of Elmira. As many of you listening already know, Carstensen is a member of the Washington Grain Commission and chairman of the Highline Grain Board of Directors. Highline formed with the consolidation of five smaller elevator companies into a single entity in 2017. Carstensen is also a podcast veteran, featured in episode 72 when I interviewed him as he was planting spring wheat. He thought it would be fun if I visited him again to harvest the field we planted together 4 months earlier in April, and I eagerly agreed. Carstensen saved the field for his last day, which meant for the first time in more than 32 years involved with the wheat industry, I was on hand for cutting that last acre. Truthfully, the ending was a little anticlimactic, as the harvest party had already been held the previous Saturday. But there was still cold beer in the cooler on Tuesday evening, so we celebrated on the patio watching the sunset, and Mike lit a well-earned cigar. I also got to meet Lori, Mike's wife, who I had earlier spotted in the distance harvesting the household lawn with a mower, while we harvested the crop that made the lawn and everything else in the family's life possible. 4 months may be the quickest I've hosted an individual on the podcast a second time, but Carstensen is a special case. Not only does he understand the value of communications, he is unafraid to speak his mind. Not to mention, he's a fan of Wheat All About It. For those listeners whose work supports farmers in the field, Carstensen's comments about his operation will deepen their understanding of the challenges farmers face. For his fellow farmers, this podcast can be used as a teachable moment on how to speak honestly with passion and conviction about wheat farming. For those who haven't had the opportunity for a ride-along in a modern combine, you'll hear some strange noises in the background of our conversation ahead. One sound is an alarm that lets the farmer know his GPS-equipped combine is coming to the end of the row and needs to turn. A different sound is an alarm that signifies that the combine's bulk tank is full and needs to be dumped. I arrived at Carstensen's place, north of Elmira on Highway 174, at about 4 p.m. Even though I'd visited him in the spring, I wasn't sure I was in the right place given the road construction that was occurring. Construction you'll hear Carstensen comment on ahead. Carstensen has an efficient operation with only two others working with him, his son Justin and a truck driver. He has one combine, one semi-truck, and one bank-out wagon. For those who don't know what a bank-out wagon is, Carstensen prefers the term grain cart as being more self-explanatory. It resembles a huge wagon pulled behind a tractor that can roam anywhere in a field and is loaded on the go. That is, while the combine continues to cut. Ordinarily, spring wheat north of Highway 2 is considered a rotation crop in support of the moneymaker, winter wheat. But this year's ideal weather resulted in a crop that Carstensen said put cash in the bank. When I arrived at his farm, Carstensen stopped his combine in almost the same spot as he stopped his tractor 20 weeks earlier. Only this time, instead of tramping through soil and straw, I crunched through recently cut stubble to the ladder of his combine. After I had settled myself in the jump seat and prepared my recording equipment, I asked Carstensen how the crop had performed.
Very, very good. I would say that this thing is probably going to yield 20% above the APH or its actual proven history.
So what are we looking at in terms of yield?
This spring wheat here is going to be in the 50 bushel neighborhood, and that's very good for this piece of ground. Now, I mean, yields for everybody this year have been probably pretty good. I've heard anywhere on the winter wheat from 20% above their APH to maybe at least 50 or 60% for most guys. Even in some cases, they may have doubled their yields. So it's been a very, very good year this year for most everyone.
Tell me about this combine we're riding in today. It's a little noisier than the tractor that we were riding in the spring.
Oh, yeah. This is a Case IH 8230, and we're using a 35-foot draper header. It happens to be a McDon header. It's not a bad matchup. Maybe a 40-foot header would be better. Right now, it's very, very efficient for us.
Do you have more than one combine, or is this it?
This is it for me.
So how old is this combine, and how long have you had it?
I've had it 2 years. It's a 2014.
And how much does a combine like this cost?
Way more than your house. This combine, I guess, is in that neighborhood of, depending on age and condition, $250,000, $300,000. And then the header, depending on that, it could be, they could run $100,000 for those draper headers. So it's a pretty significant investment.
How many days a year do you use this combine?
Relatively shortly. This year we'll put probably 150 hours of thrashing time on it. We average maybe in that 120 hours neighborhood. We just have a few more acres this year because of trying to get ground into a different rotation. We have a little more spring crop.
You know, you're essentially telling me that you're spending $300,000 for 120 hours of work. I mean, how do you rationalize an investment like that?
Well, hopefully this thing will last 10 or 15 years, and you can spread it over 10 or 15 years, but you still have to get the crop cut somehow. And, you know, we're in an area that just is not a lot of custom cutters. Like, say, the Midwest, they raise different crops in different areas, and they're just geared up back there with a lot more custom cutters available to harvest a crop.
Can you work on this combine or not?
Now, this is a funny thing. There's a lot of mechanical things we can do, yes, but there's also a lot of electronics, and you just can't. You have to have the technician from the dealer come out and diagnose certain things or change software in it, and some of the components we can change, but we can't determine what's right or what's wrong. Obviously, like I said, mechanical stuff we can do, high wear items and things like that we do in the winter and get it set up so we can have a good run at harvest. But every once in a while something will happen that the computer will throw a code, and if we know what that code is, or the tech or the dealer knows what that code is, we can maybe fix something over the phone. But chances are, if it's a computer deal, they got to come and diagnose it and fix it.
When was the last time you had to have a tech come out and do that?
Well, last year. This year, we've been fortunate. We haven't had anything like that happen. So.
And you only got 2 hours left, so let's keep our fingers crossed.
Yeah, that's about 2 hours or so left. Maybe we got a few patches that might take. I don't even know if it'll take another 2 hours, but this is the end of it. So hopefully we make her before dark.
And so how fast are we moving here?
Well, right now we happen to be going about 3.5, but we've been cutting about 5.5 miles an hour. It just happens we're on this really steep hill, and I'm not in the right gear to truly pull it, and I got to make the grain cart stop because I can't make it up it with a full bulk tank.
So now you specifically said that this has a draper header. Is there an advantage that you see to a draper header?
Every guy has an opinion. It's just like your backside. Everybody has one of those too. But I think they're more efficient. And certain crops, they handle the crop better to get into the combine. More even flow to the combine, so the combine truly runs better than, say, a rigid header. And there, it's a flexed draper header, so it will flex in ditches and going over terraces and that sort of thing. It just seems to work way a lot better.
Do you store this combine in a building the rest of the year?
Oh, yes. Yep. And work on it all winter so that at harvest you can run the whole harvest without having any major breakdowns. You might have some minor things happen, but this year we've absolutely had not a problem with it other than just a few little things. The worst problem we had this year at harvest is tires on our truck and trailer, because we're having to deal with the road construction here. 4 miles of road right in front of my house. There's some of this wheat. There's no other way to go but go out on that, and it's been awful rough on our tires.
And how many days does it take you to complete harvest?
Well, that's a relative question, because it's how many acres a guy has and how many acres you can cut an hour or so. These combines can average probably 12 acres to maybe 15 or acres an hour in winter wheat. And you can go a little bit faster in spring wheat because you have a little less material to deal with. And so you might be able to get up to that 18 or 20 acres an hour output. Like most guys, we're using a grain cart, so the combine can just keep cutting and we can unload on the go and try to improve our efficiency.
How long have you been using a grain cart?
Oh gosh, for 15 years.
Really? You must have been one of the early adopters then.
Oh, there were some guys that once they first came out could see the benefits of keeping trucks out of the field and getting all over the field. Some of these fields in this country, you just can't get a truck every place, and you would harvest the field so you could get a truck to a spot and dump in that spot. But once we went to grain carts, we could harvest a field maybe more efficiently based on the cutting pattern of the field and dump any place in that field. And also those grain carts, keeping trucks out of the field, eliminates some of the risk of fire.
And compaction, yes?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt, compaction. You know, Scott, the bulk tank on this combine's about 300 bushel. Maybe we can jag a little more in there. And that grain cart, it's over 1,000 bushel grain cart, so we can dump three dumps in that grain cart. And that's one load for our semi. Weight-wise, we want to stay in about that 900 bushel area when we go to the elevator with that particular truck. So that works out really well for harvest to be able to get three full dumps in there, buzz over to the truck, load the truck up, truck guy goes to the elevator, then we're back. We just don't stop cutting, and truck guy dumps and gets back, and when he gets back, we probably have three more dumps in that cart for him to take again to the elevator.
We're both getting up there in years. You have lots of experience on this farm. How long did this farm take you to harvest 20 years ago?
Well, 20 years ago it was probably a lot less acres, although we were in a little different operation, and we would spend 20 days as well, just not cover quite as many acres.
We were just coming down a bit of an incline. You don't have a hillside mechanism on this combine, correct?
No, we don't. The only thing this combine has is they call it a self-leveling shoe on the back that goes to a certain percentage of angle on some of these hills. But in the past, I've owned hillside combines. We just don't have one now, and we're probably not as steep as that country down in the Palouse where they cut around those hills. And some of these we can go up and over. So just a little different topography than really needing one of those hillside combines.
You're avoiding this little patch of flowers here. I know they're weeds. They look like white flowers. What are they, and how are you treating them?
That's dog fennel, and it's a second flush in a really wet area. And it's like I told you before, our market, they don't want weeds in the weed. They want clean weeds. So every chance we get, we try to avoid something that maybe carry over into the bulk tank.
Will you just leave that as a hole in your field?
No, my plan is to swath it and come back and bale it and try to get all the weed seed out of there. If it was a different variety of weed, maybe, and it would dry down somewhat, you could burn the seeds. But this variety, I'm not going to do that.
I was on a farm the other day where the combines were connected to GPS. Is that a new thing?
Relatively new, within the last, well, when GPS came out for tractors, they were available for combines, and boy, they sure make it more, way more efficient using GPS. And not only that, but with the GPS, you can yield map the field, and then that can lead right into fertilizing that field based on the yield maps and soil tests of that field.
And this combine, does it have GPS?
Yes, it does, and obviously you're seeing the straight lines we're driving, and that's on the GPS mark. And then if I go to this page here, you can see where it's recording yield on a map. And what we'll do is we'll take that yield map and we'll take soil tests and knowledge of the field and write what they call a prescription to when we go fertilize. Our fertilizer will set it at certain rates. Say you break the ground up into really good ground, average ground, and poor ground, and we'll fertilize different rates on the really good ground and the average ground and the poor ground, and we'll write a prescription. GPS will take care of the fertilizer machine altering the rates of fertilizer so we can try to get more beneficial with the ground and more efficient with our fertilizer.
So is the combine the most important piece of equipment on your farm, you think?
You know, I would answer it this way. The most important item on my farm is probably my wife.
I'll make sure your wife listens to this podcast, okay?
Oh, she will. To get back to your question about important equipment, it's kind of like baseball. What's more important, the pitcher or the batter? And so each thing has its function, and they kind of go somewhat, they're not related, but they go hand in hand.
So in your farming career, has there ever been a time where you stopped for lunch and your wife brought out a hot lunch for you, or have you been eating a box lunch on the fly for all these years?
You go back to the horse-drawn days, and obviously they stopped for the horses and they had lunches. And we used to stop and have lunches, and it got to where we figured we were burning too much daylight. And so we went to taking our lunches, and then we would maybe, instead of burning so much time at lunch, we'd maybe quit a little earlier. And we've kind of done that over the years, and that's kind of where we're at now.
The beginning of the month, we were really in kind of a terrible fire situation. Were you concerned about fires this year, and have you done anything differently because of the fires?
Well, I think everybody is concerned about fires at harvest time. I mean, it's just a very, very dry time, and temperatures are very, very hot. One example is when they had the fire in the Del Rio country. That day, the wind started out real light, but by early afternoon, they were in that 25, 35 mile an hour range, and everybody in this country shut down just because if fire started, it wouldn't stop. And I don't know if I answered your question or not, but
it sounds like it's uppermost in your mind, and you're doing everything to prevent it that you can.
Oh yeah, and sometimes on really, really hot days, you may halfway through the day kind of just take a stop and check everything. Some guys will blow equipment off, blow the combine off. You just have areas that you watch pretty close. And I'm sure every farmer's the same way.
I would imagine that there's a lot of things that you don't miss about earlier harvests. What is the one thing you do miss about the harvests of your youth?
That's a good question. There's a lot of things. I suppose the main thing is probably the people and the crew that we have had before, and not having them around. For example, my father at harvest, he'd love it to be here. We have him come out and visit, and he rides combine. But as part of the crew, go back to those days when he was part of the crew, and some of the past workers we've had, I guess you miss all those people.
In your youth, how many people would be on the farm during harvest? I mean, there's two of you here today. How many would you have had on the farm, you know, when you were 20 years old?
Well, one time we ran four MHs, and we ran two or three trucks, and then we kind of went to a grain cart, so we've had, you know, maybe 7 or 8 people at different times. And now we're down to 3.
2 today. On a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate the crop season which grew the wheat that we are harvesting now? So this would be the spring crop season.
You know, the only thing that I would say would keep this from a 10 and having maybe some of the best yields I've ever had was probably that little frost in June where it got kind of cold, and some of my best yielding fields, I have a few areas where I could see that frost damage, and that kept that from maybe the maximum yield. So I'd have to rate this thing in the 8 maybe.
We're dealing with a lot of issues this year. U.S. absence from the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade treaty and the trade war, the tariffs that are developing with China. What keeps you up at night nowadays?
The phone rings off the hook, I suppose.
And who is on the other end of the line?
People who want to comment or have questions. And you know, not to make light of that, it's pretty important to them, whatever issues they have. It's the most important thing they have. But you know, right now the market is maybe a dollar better in the soft white wheat, maybe is a dollar better than they got last year. So how can you say, well, gosh, the trade war is really hurting me? But it's not the short-term effect.
But I was just on the phone with another farmer, and he was saying to me, I really would like to know how much better the price would be if we didn't have all this stuff going on.
That's a good question. But I actually think that my opinion again, and everybody has one just like our backside, but that it's a long-term effect of this trade thing that can get us. And I don't know if there would be a whole lot more money in the market. There may be. And I know that to the guy that's getting affected with intellectual property problems or that sort of thing, that China does need to be brought to task. But how come we have to bear the brunt of that as the American farmer?
Do you feel conflicted at all that we have a president who is a Republican that is basically goring farming's ox?
That's a good question. You know, I don't know if I'm conflicted. The thing that gets me, and I've said this, is, and people have read this, that the farmers want predictability and certainty. And we have enough unpredictability in our weather and just in our nature of our business. So when we got areas that can be controlled, if we can get a handle on it, then we want, like I said, predictability in our markets and whatnot and in trade agreements. I know it's a big picture item, and farmers are just looking at their area, but anytime you have a trade war, it's always been agriculture that bears the brunt of it. I'll tell you, the biggest issue this harvest that I have seen and my neighbors have seen is the lack of timeliness with getting our grades back. And you know, I would say that, and I would have to say, well, that's on the WSDA or the Washington State Department of Agriculture. They do a very, very good job grading for all of us. The worst thing is right now they're getting like 500 grades a day to do, and they can only process maybe 200 to 250 in a day, and that's a day like from 7 in the morning till 8 or 9 at night. I started on the 6th. I only got 2 grades back. I'll be done today. And I thought that was pretty bad till I talked to a friend at Ritzville who's been done almost before I started, and he doesn't have all his grades back.
This is your last day of harvest, and you will be finished probably by 7 or 8 o'clock. Do you do anything special on the last day?
Well, we did it on Saturday night.
But you weren't finished. But anyhow, what'd you do Saturday night?
Well, some of the things we did, we cannot say what we did on the podcast. So you just have to leave it at that.
All right. You know, I'm looking out over here at this panorama of hundreds of acres in front of us that's already been cut. Do you ever get bored doing this? Or is it always, boy, this is my payday. This is what's really important.
This dryland wheat country, a farmer's event horizon is 2 years. This crop took 2 years to get here, and this is the fruition of it. And yeah, it's our paycheck. We get that paycheck once a year. But, looking out here, and do I ever get tired of this? Well, most of the guys listen to this podcast get it. My job's a vacation every day. It's just not a job. And when you really like what you're doing, it's a vacation. It's not a job. And, some days on vacation are worse than others, and that's the same thing here, but it's a pretty good lifestyle.
Although Carstensen was pleased with this year's harvest, it wasn't all hearts and roses. While his yields in general were excellent, there were disappointments. The spring barley he planted went 2,100 pounds an acre, when double that might have been expected. A few heirloom wheat varieties he planted also did poorly, coming in at just above 20 bushels an acre, where 30 bushels an acre for these older varieties might have been expected. Frost might have been the culprit. If you haven't already listened to my earlier conversation with Carstensen while we planted the field, go to the Washington Grain Commission website at wagrains.org, and at the bottom of the page, click on Summaries to navigate back through the podcast to get to episode 72, which I entitled Spring Seeding with the WGC's Mike Carstensen. It's worth your time. Speaking of time, that's all we have for now. I hope you've enjoyed episode 91, A Vacation Every Day. Please join me again next time for another episode of Wheat All About It.
You think we're simple, you think we're not bright. Look at your cities and ask yourself who's right. We've got country and you've got crime. We've got green and you've got grime. Let there be no doubt, we have what it takes to till the soil until our back aches. Just give us a break and don't be so rude. We love the work and you love the food.
We feed you.